This is Digital Story Podcast number 896, May 23rd, 2023. Today's theme is Stepping Outside Your Comfort Zone. I'm Derek Story. Being the creatures of habit that we are, it's easy to stick with things we're comfortable with. In the world of photography, that could mean landscapes only, or I'm really a Photoshop guy. But what would happen if you stepped out of your comfort zone into the unknown waters of experimentation? I have a few real-life stories to share of photographers who did just that. I hope you enjoy the show. It's not that most photographers don't want to experiment, but sometimes they need a little nudge. I just spent a week with a group of artists in Northern California who were doing exactly that. And I think their stories are interesting because I watched them over the course of the week as they decided, okay, this is normally what I do. This is what I'm going to do this week, or this is what I'm going to try this week. And then they'd be a little unsure about it. And then they'd think about it. And then they'd try it. And, you know, the whole process to me was fascinating. I just loved it. And then, of course, at the end of the week, I got to see the results of all of this trial and error. And they were fabulous. It was exciting. They were excited to present these pictures. And we were excited to be viewing them, commenting, and asking about how they did it. And I think all of us learned quite a bit during this whole process, not only learning by doing the experimentation itself, but then by learning from others who are trying things, and then they showed us how they did them. So this is a lot of fun. So what I'm going to do today is share five stories with you of people who stepped outside of their comfort zone with their photography and what they did. The first one. Scott. I'm primarily a street photographer. So Scott generally packs a compact Ricoh GR when he heads out the door. He has the Ricoh GR from a few iterations ago, and he still shoots with that. He loves street photography. He loves how the GR performs when you're out and about, how it doesn't intimidate other people, how it's compact so you can carry it anywhere. It's easy to shoot with. You know, all those things that we love about that camera, Scott loves that too. But when he came to this workshop, he was packing a Fujifilm mirrorless camera with a grip, right? Not just the camera itself, but he had a grip on it. And he was packing a telephoto lens that was, I believe, 100 to 400 millimeters on an APS-C sensor. So this was a hefty beast he was lugging around. And I remember on the first day, this is even before the workshop. So we arrived on Monday. You know, everyone kind of gets there in the afternoon and we're hanging out and unpacking and getting ready for the workshop to start on Tuesday. And where we were staying, it was fabulous because we had this deck outside of headquarters, this really great deck that looked out over Tomales Bay. So there were lots of geese out there. There were egrets. There were all sorts of stuff hanging around that we could just photograph while, you know, getting our camera set up and all that. So Scott had mentioned to his friends back home that there were tule elk in the Point Reyes area where we were going to be. And so they challenged him to bring home an elk picture, which I thought was really cool. So when I first saw Scott, he was out on this back deck overlooking the bay. And he was kind of fooling around with his camera. I mean, the one with the big lens and the grip and everything. And just, you know, kind of trying to get comfortable with it. And I asked him, I go, wow, that's a really nice rig. And he goes, yeah, I never shoot with it. You know, I'm usually, you know, doing street photography with the Ricoh GR. And I thought, well, if I was ever going to learn how to shoot with this combination, this workshop would be it. And then he told me about the challenge of bringing home an elk shot. So I was looking at it and he was looking at it, and it just looked so kind of awkward in his hands, you know, as we were out there back on the wooden deck. And I said, well, you know what? If you were ever going to get comfortable with this combination, this week is going to be it. You know, this week is going to be where you have a project, you have a goal, and you have lots of opportunity to use it. And he had a nice backpack for it, and, you know, he was ready to go. So sure enough, every day that we went out, he had his backpack. He had that camera lens combination in there. He pulled it out and was shooting with it. I never saw the Ricoh GR at all. The first day, we were a little challenged. We did find a herd of elk, but it was really foggy. We were out on this peninsula, and they were kind of hidden in the fog. We'd see them kind of come out a little bit, but it wasn't the most ideal shooting situation. So he worked it a bit. He worked the situation. And I was kind of thinking, wow, I don't know. This is not going to be great when I go home. You know, I'm going to get a lot of ribbing. So it was on the third day, I believe. And I had seen, while I was scouting, I had seen some cows, elk, out in this one area that they don't normally hang out. And it was an area where we were going to have lunch. We were coming back from lunch, and Scott was in the car, and he said, well, if you happen to see any elk while we're out driving around, do you mind if we stop? Because I still need to get that shot. And by now, he was pretty comfortable with his camera and lens combo. Not a minute later, we were looking out, and out in a meadow to the right, there was first one buck, and then two bucks, and then $5, and they said they saw a total of $12, and we're talking about with big racks. So we pulled over, we found a place to pull over, we got out, Scott pulled out his rig, and when I was watching him shoot with this rig, because he had been working with it the last few days, he was getting it done. He was getting it done, and in the presentation, he showed us a fantastic elk shot, not only to share with us, not only to prove how he had really worked with his gear and gotten comfortable with it, but then to take it home to his friends to show off well. And I was really proud of him on how he did the whole arc just over the course of a few days, from really kind of holding this camera and looking at it like, how does this work, to coming home with a wonderful telephoto elk shot. It was fantastic. It really was. The next one, Harry. I'm not going to shoot big landscapes. So Harry had been on our workshops before, and one of the things that he does really well, his comfort zone, is shooting big landscapes. Just, you know, big sweeping landscapes, and he's very good at it. He's very good with Photoshop. And for this workshop, he said, no, I'm not going to do that. I want to do something different. So what he decided to do was work close, do some nice close-up work, work with in-camera processing. In other words, setting up, let's say, monochrome settings in his camera, and then getting the best JPEGs possible out of that. He was working with intentional camera movement, where you move the camera while you're taking the shot. And he worked with something that is either called a quad pix, or, you know, we know what dip pics are and tri pics, but this was like where he put four images of a subject, but they were different, into one frame divided into four squares. So Harry worked with all of these techniques all week, and he was just, he was going, I don't know. I don't know if this is going to work out. I don't know. He was really kind of questioning his choices on what to focus on, yet he kept doing it. He kept doing it, and he kept with it all week. In his presentation, he showed us a fantastic intentional camera movement shot that he got out at Drake's Bay of a breaking wave that was just stunning. Two super close-up shots that were fantastic. One of them using focus stacking of an iris, super impressive. A black and white shot where he worked the settings inside the camera and then produced a JPEG right out of the camera. And then two quad pics that were semi-abstract, but yet they weren't. And one of them was of reeds at Abbott's Lagoon that I think was just fantastic. He did all of these techniques during the course of the week. He worked very hard on, you know, getting the best out of each technique. And when he presented them in the presentation, it was fantastic. It was so fun to watch not only what he produced, because the images were beautiful, but also to listen to his process as he tried to figure out how to do these different techniques, and then watching the success, seeing the success up on the screen. It was really great, and I'm super proud of Harry for sticking with it and for going way beyond the big landscape. Rich, going the extra mile. So Rich is the most senior member of our group, and he really doesn't do much hiking these days. But here he was out in the middle of all these different locations, and we usually had to go about a mile, hiking about a mile to get to where we wanted to go from the trailhead. Now, these weren't crazy hikes or anything, but it was still a mile on, you know, terrain, on, you know, on a trail. The way that I set these things up is that you can go as far as you want within the time period, or not as far as you want within the time period. You know, there's always stuff to shoot 200 yards away or 400 yards away, that kind of stuff. And I let everyone kind of go at their own pace. On the second day, we were going out to Abbott's Lagoon, a fairly even hike, but yet it had some length to it. It was 1 mile to the bridge, and the bridge is kind of where things start at the lagoon. I was out there, I got some shots, and I just sort of was enjoying being there and trying to keep tabs on everyone best I could. And I knew that Rich was behind me, but I had assumed that maybe he had gone a quarter mile or so, because he can find an interesting photo subject anywhere. He's one of those guys that just has an eye to find a photo subject wherever he's standing. And he was doing quite well with that. And I started to head back, and lo and behold, I ran into Rich on the trail. And he's right there, and I'm going, wow, I can't believe it. You're out here working and, you know, going that extra mile. And he said, yeah, I wanted to see what I could find. I wanted to see what I could do. And he buckled down. He did the hike. He got great shots. And I'm looking at his shots right now, and they're varied. I mean, he's got everything from poppies alongside the trail to artistic plant shots to big landscapes. He did a beach abstract that was fantastic. And I'm just going, he got out and did it. He got out and did it. He pushed himself to go farther than he normally goes. And yet he continued to work the camera the whole way. And because he saw more terrain, because he saw more landscape, he came back with more pictures. And when he did his presentation, it had variety. It had really his trademark, you know, the way that he composed stuff. And they were beautiful. And I was just like so proud of not only how well he shot, but also how he kind of went that extra mile and didn't just say, I'm just going to do what I normally do. He didn't do that. He did a lot more. And I thought it was really cool that Rich went that extra mile and got those extra shots. Steve, I'm not going to be bound by conventional standards. So Steve loves to experiment anyway, which I really like about him. And I think the best example of him pushing the boundaries and experimenting was when we went to the Point Reyes shipwreck. So this is the standard shot that you have to do when you're in the area. It's like kissing the Blarney Stone. It's that kind of thing. And we don't know how much longer this shipwreck is going to be there because it's beginning to disintegrate, but it's there and we went out to shoot it. And so I was talking about, while we're at the shipwreck, how it's interesting how you can take a group of photographers and put them in a spot and let them do their thing, and how even though it's the same subject, same lighting, same everything, they're going to come away with different images. And everyone did. Everyone worked the shot and they came away with some very interesting things. And, you know, we showed them during the presentation. But Steve wanted to go further. He wanted to push it further. So he shot this disintegrating boat with a super wide angle lens to really sort of emphasize how much is falling apart, right? The rest of us were trying to shoot angles where it kind of looked good, right? You know, where you couldn't see how bad it was. Steve went just the opposite direction. He went just the opposite direction, wide angle lens, and just like opened this thing up, made it look like, you know, a pile of lumber practically. Then on top of that, he used dramatic lighting for the scene, and then he added this crazy dramatic sky, this dark sky with light beams and all this sort of stuff, and colorized the whole thing so that it had this very moody feel to it. His shot was completely different than everyone else's. It was 180 degrees different than what anyone else did, and all of the shots were different, and then there was his, which was five times more different. And it was stunning. It was beautiful. It was really cool to look at. And everyone just sort of just leaned forward when his shot came up on the screen. And I just thought that it was really neat how he took up that challenge to create something that was interesting to look at. I mean, to me, I'm looking at the shot right now. It's actually beautiful. And yet so different and kind of going against the norm. He was substituting a sky, using a wide angle lens, all that kind of stuff. He is a great example of someone who's just not afraid to buck the standard, to say, you know, I don't care what people think about sky replacement. I don't care what people think about this or that. This is what's interesting to me, and this is what I'm going to do. And that's how Steve did the whole week. And it was really cool to look at the results. And finally, Michael, who was experimenting with the illusion of depth. Now, Michael had just written an article for us on LiveView. He's one of our writers for LiveView on Medium.com. And his article was about how when you take a picture of something, it looks different than when you're standing there. And when you're standing there, you know, you see all this depth. And it just kind of goes flat when you take a picture. And he's talking about, you know, our vision, you know, our stereo vision, and then using just a single camera. Then he talked about ways that artists sometimes are able to create that illusion of depth to come closer to what we may be seeing when we're standing there in real life. So he took this opportunity while we're in Point Reyes to actually experiment with this. And it was kind of neat conditions for it, because on a number of the days in the morning, we would have this fog. You know, we would be in this fog, especially when we went out on the points and so forth. So we'd have these cypress trees that were in the fog and kind of in the background. He would find something in the foreground that was interesting, like an old barn or another piece of a building, or even some cypress trees that weren't in the fog with cypress trees that were in the fog in the background. And he would really play with these elements where you would have something kind of close to you and sharp and detailed, and then it'd trail off into something that was less detailed and kind of softened by all the moisture that was in the background. And he used this technique in many different situations to great effect. And it was really fun to watch him experiment with this and try to really create this look that he was curious about, that he had written about scientifically, but now he was out there actually living it and experimenting with it with his camera. And the results were very impressive, very artistic. And I think, You know, we all learned a lot from the work that Michael did, and in addition to that, really enjoyed it. So those are five stories of photographers that I was working with this last week who really took up the challenge of experimenting and stepping outside of their normal comfort zones and doing something different. And I found it really quite inspiring, and I was hoping that maybe you would find this inspiring too. And if you take up that challenge and give it a try and really put your back into it, I think you're going to be pleased with the results. And suddenly you have a whole new technique to add to your bag of tricks, and you have become a more versatile photographer than you were before you tried it. Pentax's first film camera project release to be a fixed lens compact, hence film SLR, maybe next. And you can read this entire article on DP Review. I have a link in the show notes. In the midst of film resurgence, Ricoh announced last year that they were going to explore the idea of building a new film body camera under the Pentax banner. We covered that on this site, and this is a follow-up to that. Details were scant. We knew that Ricoh was launching a film camera project to formally house a research and development team, but we didn't know timelines, form factor, price points that they had in mind, or what criteria they were using to use to decide if they're actually building a film body was a viable idea. The last peep on that front from them was Pentax's December 2022 announcement, until this past weekend when Ricoh published a pair of new YouTube videos that detailed the project's progress. In a video released, we learned more about the camera that Pentax has committed to building, along with a hint of a possible second film camera to come. Pentax's first film body will be a compact fixed lens camera, according to the Pentax product planning design team member Takeo Suzuki. Pentax clearly sees the opportunity in film cameras and may be positioning itself to fill the void left by its competitors. The company has famously kept manufacturing DSLRs as other manufacturers have moved to mirrorless bodies. Perhaps here too, Pentax is seeing gold to be mined with consumers seeking ways to discover or rediscover a classic style of image making. Film photographers may not represent the mainstream today, but the community is growing. The closest parallel may be the return of vinyl record albums, which grew from a small niche of buyers a decade ago to outsell CDs in 2022. First time that's happened since 1988. Accounting for $1.2 billion, a 20% jump from the previous year. So film photography could be a fad, or if it goes the way of vinyl, a potential boon for Pentax. You go, Pentax. I am watching you very closely. Matavor Media offers bundle of photo sites. And this isn't a story. I just stumbled onto this when I was researching something else. I decided to go over to imageresource.com because that link had stopped working after the sale to Matavor. And I wanted to see if they had put it back online or what's going on. So I go over to imagingresource.com, I click on the link, and what comes up is outdoor photographer. I go, okay, this is interesting. No imaging resource, but we have outdoor photographer. So then I saw this notice that they had posted on there. It's like a for sale sign. And here's what it said. Matavor Media is offering the following bundle of its print and digital photo properties. This bundle includes ICN, Image Creators Network, Outdoor Photographer, Imaging Resource, Digital Photo Pro, and Digital Photo. This is an as-is only bundle offering and includes archives, websites, and sub-roster. The price for the whole bundle, $500,000. Serious inquiries only. So they're basically bundling up all these properties that they don't want because they're mainly kind of dance and music, right? That's their thing. And they kind of ended up with these properties in order to get other properties that they wanted. And we were wondering, remember I covered the story not too long ago, a couple of weeks ago, we were wondering what they were going to do with sites like Imaging Resource. And I was wondering if Outdoor Photographer might be on the block as well. Well, apparently they're all up for auction for only $500,000. You know, I got to tell you, my gut on this tells me that we're about to lose five more photography sites because I just don't see someone picking this up, paying that kind of money. And then it's not the money that you pay to get it. And then you've got to build staffs for all of these things. You have to secure advertising. I mean, there's a lot of work, all the technical work. So I feel like not only are we going to lose DP Review, but we're going to lose these other five sites as well. This is a tough year for photography websites and a tough year for those of us who enjoy reading them. AI-generated image of Pentagon explosion caused markets to dip. And here's an article that was on petapixel.com. I have the link to it in the show notes. You can read the whole thing there. An artificial intelligence generated photo which showed a fake explosion outside the Pentagon went viral and caused the markets to briefly dip today. This is Monday. On Monday morning, an image showing a huge cloud of black smoke on a grass lawn outside a building was widely shared across Twitter with reports that there had been an explosion near the Pentagon building in Washington, D.C. But the photograph of the explosion was a hoax generated with AI technology. The U.S. stock market briefly dipped as news of the explosion spread. The fake image was reportedly first shared on Twitter at 10:06 local time, although the original post has since been removed from the platform. And by 10:10, the U.S. stock market had turned sharply lower shortly after reports of the explosion had circulated. However, the market bounced back and stabilized after the photo was revealed to be an AI-generated hoax. I don't even know what to think about all of this. I mean, all these volatile situations, stock market being the epitome of volatility. We have the gossip stream, the hyper-gossip stream known as social media. And then we have AI technologies that can create images of, well, practically anything. And you put all these things together, and what could go wrong? I have a feeling we're probably going to be seeing more of these stories. And I think as consumers, as people who spend time online and who read things, I think we're going to really have to sharpen our critical thinking skills if we're going to get through this next period. Could be a bumpy ride. All right, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. I want to start out talking about our upcoming workshop, Wine Country and Autumn Photography Workshop this November. This is going to be combining landscape photography, horticulture photography, some beautiful behind-the-scenes opportunities at these wineries that are just stunning. And then, of course, we're going to study wine and food pairing itself from some very knowledgeable people. We're going to be doing tastings. It's just going to be a lovely time. This is a great time of year to be up here in Sonoma County. We still have a few seats open. If you're interested in this, it's November 2nd through the 4th, 2023. And I have a link to it in the show notes. Or you can just go to thenimblephotographer.com or click on workshops at the Digital Story. I hope you join us. I'd like to thank our Inner Circle members, those who support us through Patreon. As an example of this and how I love to tap this group, their knowledge and their opinions as a resource, I asked them this question. What do you think of an online course about AI imaging? This was posted on the Inner Circle. And so I did a poll, and the poll was interesting. 32% were interested in AI-powered imaging technologies. 32% said, not my cup of tea. 30% said they're curious, but not so much that they would attend a workshop. So that right away sort of helps me, you know, understand, is this something that I should invest my time in, or should I move on to a different subject for our online coursework? So there was a lot of benefit there, but then they also take the time to comment. And the commenting, I think, is just as important as the actual poll itself. One of the interesting comments to me was from Matthew. I am somewhat interested as I am mostly avoiding AI services at this time, such as ChatGPT. I'm on the fence if I'd be interested in this course at time. And then Mark follows that by saying, I would like to learn more to make more informed decisions on AI photography. AI is not going away. And then Greg adds on, not only to understand the process, but also to detect when an image I'm seeing is a generated one, an AI generated one. And the conversation goes on from there. I mean, some really good stuff. So two things here. First of all, I want to thank our Inner Circle members for sharing their knowledge here, for sharing their ideas and helping me decide what to focus my energy on for our online workshops. And then second of all, I really appreciate their views on this topic, this AI topic. And the bottom line is, for most of the folks in the Inner Circle, they're interested right now in AI more on how it's implemented in the tools, you know, as we're seeing in Topaz, as we're seeing in Lightroom and so forth, but not so much in generating images like using Midjourney. So that's another facet of the Inner Circle that I truly appreciate. A big thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting this community. If you want to join the Inner Circle, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Take a look, see what you think, and hopefully you will join us in 2023. And finally, a huge shout out to our friends at Red River Paper. Definitely not AI. This is putting ink on paper, creating artwork, and then sharing it with the world. Something that you can hold in your hands. Something that you can frame and put on the wall. Something that you can send to someone else to tell them thank you or how much they mean to you in a very personal and artistic way. Red River Paper helps us do all of these things. And all you have to do is click on the tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Go over there, take a look, see what you can do with the inkjet printer that you probably already have right now, but are underutilizing. They will show you the projects, the different types of paper, the little accessories that really finish off these projects. They will show you all of that, plus reviews, and help you get going with what I consider one of the more rewarding aspects of photography. Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. They have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. And a big thanks to them for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm working on some more great stuff for next week. In the meantime, get out there, push those boundaries, take some pictures, and then come back next Tuesday. See you then. Bye-bye now.